very basic, fundamental things. Let's talk about some higher level functions. Okay, we know that in order to function in a TCP/IP environment, we have to have some configuration information. Where do we get that?
We can manually enter it.
Okay, you can manually enter it. Well, first of all, where does it come from?
The network organ, the network provider.
Okay.
Whether that be the internet or your local.
Excellent. Back in the day, you could go to IANA and you would buy a block of IP addresses. We don't do that anymore. Now you go to an internet service provider and they provide you with either one or more IP addresses based on what your needs are. And most organizations nap behind a firewall and they use non-routable addresses behind the firewall.
Yep.
So in your DMZ and your publicly routable stuff, web servers and those kind of things, you have to have routable IP addresses for those.
Yep.
But for your computer, just like these computers have .10 or 10.0 addresses, they get out to the internet just fine.
Yep.
But
you don't want to talk back to them from the internet.
You have a couple of advantages when you do that. One, it obfuscates your IP address. You're not accessible from the internet. You're only accessible from another device on the 10 subnet. So if a hacker were able to compromise the college's firewall, he could attack you from there.
Yep.
But to come through the firewall and attack you is not possible for the global internet. Now, he can attack you indirectly by sending you spam and getting you to click on a link and those kind of things.
Yep.
But you're going to get some configuration information from your internet service provider for your internet-facing stuff, and the rest of the stuff, you basically make it up using the private IP addresses. Now, once you've got that addressing scheme down, you can statically assign those addresses. So you go to each machine, you log in, you run the tool, and you enter the information. That's it's time-consuming.
Yep. Take a long time. A lot of machines.
Prone to error.
Yeah, prone to error.
So there are better ways to do that. And one of the most widely accepted methods is called Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol, DHCP. DHCP is broadcast-based. What's a broadcast?
Sends it out to everybody on the network.
It's an email packet that goes to everybody. Well, what's everybody?
Everybody on that same subnet.
Okay, how do we know who's on the same subnet?
By the network address, or the IP address in the subnet mask.
Not exactly.
They don't have an IP address yet.
Yes, they do. Each network has a broadcast address.
Oh, yeah, that.
And it's the network ID followed by 255.
255.
If it's a class A, 255.255.255. If it's class B, 255.255. If it's class C, 255. If it's something in between, whatever all ones is your broadcast address.
That's right.
For the network. So when he fires up, he sends a packet to the address. Broadcast address, which goes to everybody on his network.
Right. And he says, which one of you is this going to hand me address info?
Yeah, he says, it's called a DHCP discover packet. Hey, is there any DHCP servers out there? And every DHCP server that can hear that broadcast will reply to it. Every one of them.
That's going to be fun. So how do they know which one gets it?
It's kind of like, no, I ain't going to say that. But it's the first one that gets there, okay? So the first reply he gets, he's going to basically negotiate with that server for an IP address. Now, what if there's no DHCP server on your network? Or it's not accessible?
Then you get a private IP.
That's exactly what's going to happen. You're going to get a private IP address, and it's not going to be very usable. So if you have that situation where you have a limited number of DHCP servers and they're not on your network, what must you do? You got to find a way to get to a DHCP server. Typically, by default, without special configuration, broadcasts do not pass through routers. And you can make it, but it's not a good idea. It's not a good plan. Because broadcasts generate a lot of traffic.
Oh, yeah.
So if I have a DHCP server that's on a different network from me, then I have what's called a DHCP relay agent. A DHCP relay agent is a computer that's on your network that's configured statically with an IP address that knows how to contact the DHCP server on your behalf.
Oh, cool.
And he basically acts as a proxy. You say, hey, is there any DHCP servers out there? He's like, no, but I got a buddy.
That's a good way to look at it. I know somebody that can help you. Let me transfer you.
And he says, okay, go talk to your buddy. Tell him Joe sent you. And I need a package.
Oh, God. Yep.
And that's how DHCP is assigned. It's four packets, two out, two in. Now, one of the things you're going to need to know is how many bits are in an IP address.
Which version?
Four.
Okay.
128?
32. 32. 32. 32.
Oh,
eight.
That was like
four times eight, right? Yeah. Four octets, one byte per octet.
Which is eight.
Which is eight. Okay. How many bits in a MAC address?
You see, that's the one.
That's 32, isn't it?
No, 32 is the IP address.
Let's see, it's 12. Let's see. 64.
Open up a command prompt and type ipconfig.
Oh, I love doing that. I do it all the time. Good God, there's a lot of info here.
Did you get good information or just a little bit of information?
A little bit.
Have to put a forward slash all at the end of it, but.
Yep.
If you scroll up to the top of that return, you should see something called a. What is it called? MAC address. It's called MAC address. What's it called? There it is right there. It's called physical address. Okay, what do you see? How many sets of numbers are there?
12 in total.
No.
It's.
They're separated by dashes. Each one of those numbers separated by dashes is a hexadecimal number that represents a value from 0 to 256. How many bytes does it take to represent a value from 0 to 256? It takes one byte, 8 bits. Okay, so how many bytes are represented in that MAC address?
48
bit. That's eight right. Bytes. Eight. It's.
No. Six bytes.
Six bytes. 48 bits. There you go. Okay, so you'll never forget. That's how you find out if you forget.
Look it up and you'll see.
You can look it up. Okay, there's a couple of diagrams in there that say, one of them says, like, what command created this output?
Ooh.
So, you know, once you've run these commands a few times, you know what the output looks like. You know how to look at your routing table? In that same command prompt, type route space print.
Ooh.
Yeah. And if you scroll up to the top, just take a look at the whole thing. And you see you have some, not that far up, just to the top of your route space print. And you'll see you have some entries for different networks and a gateway that will get you to that network along with an IP address and some other stuff. So you got one called 0.0.0.0. See that one?
Yeah.
That means the global internet. It means everybody. If you see something that says 255.255.255.255, that means one guy. So if I were to ask you, for example, which entry in your routing table points to the internet, you would know that it's the one that's 0.0.0.0. And they have headings there. So what are the headings there, Phil, if you're looking at it? Okay, there you go. See the metrics? That metric is a cost. And it's not a cost in dollars or cents. It's a cost in, I don't even know what it's a cost in. It's basically a figure of merit. Lower metric is a lower cost, and a higher metric is a higher cost. Your computer will make decisions for you based on the cost of the route. And it'll say, hey, this route costs less. It must be faster. I'm going to use the least cost route. And speaking of routes,